This hour of the Jason Rancho brought to you by Primary Residential Mortgage, PRMI. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? National.
So some drama over the weekend as impeachment came to a close. The president, of course, was acquitted. But beforehand, the House impeachment managers, despite pretty much both sides saying it was not necessary, they tried to call witnesses. They claimed conduct after a riot would show proof that the president was trying to incite said riot. And all of a sudden, Washington State got into the spotlight. Because Jamie Herrera Butler, congresswoman, who I believe is going to be on the show this week, recounted a conversation with Leader McCarthy, Kevin McCarthy, suggesting that Trump was okay with the rioters. Saying something along the lines of, well, I guess they care a little bit more about the election being stolen than you do. Despite Kevin McCarthy begging for the president to call off his supporters. It was a little bit of a surprise that the House impeachment managers wanted to call witnesses, but once they realized that Republicans would then call Nancy Pelosi and ask her why she did not want National Guard there earlier, that they were going to call Kamala Harris and ask her about raising money to bail out criminal rioters, and on and on and on. Once they realized that this was a bad idea, they decided to pull back. The president's lawyer basically said, you just put her statement into the record. It's all good. They moved on. What was interesting, they could have called if they wanted to, and this was not just a show trial. They could have called Kevin McCarthy, who was the person who actually had the conversation with the president. But instead, they were using Jamie Herrera Butler. This would have been hearsay. And by the way, in an actual court of law, they would never have allowed, especially this late in the game, they would never have allowed the congresswoman to testify. They skipped over Kevin McCarthy and they went to a congresswoman who had a conversation with someone about a conversation rather than going to the person who had the direct conversation. That should have been a red flag for a lot of folks. But of course, most folks on the right were saying, stipulate that this is true. This doesn't prove that he instigated a riot, that he wanted a riot to happen. But Jamie Raskin, the congressman from Maryland, the lead impeachment manager, said, oh, no, no, au contraire.
Senators, think about it for a second. Say you light a fire and you're charged with arson. And the defense counsel says, everything that I did after the fire started is irrelevant. And the court would reject that immediately and say, that's not true at all. It's extremely relevant to whether or not you committed the crime. If you run over and try to put out the flames, if you get lots of water and say, help, help, there's a fire, if you call for help, a court will infer that, could infer that you didn't intend for the fire to be lit in the first place. They would accept your defense, perhaps, that it was all an accident.
Is there any world, in which Democrats would ever accept anything that the president says? Any defense offered? The president used rhetoric that politicians have used for centuries. And yet still, we're at a point in which we're pretending that when the president says fight for your country, he literally means fight for your country. When Joe Biden says we're engaged in a battle for the soul of this country, he means it figuratively. When Trump says it, he means it literally. It's, of course, all nonsense. And you know it's nonsense because, as I said a couple weeks ago, Democrats are exposed and vulnerable without Trump. They need him. Without him as the boogeyman, they have to face the reality that their party is becoming so fringe that it would be rejected by mainstream Americans. It would be rejected by mainstream Democrats. Do you think mainstream Democrats, normal Democrats, reasonable people, want anything to do with the AOCs of the world and the Ilhan Omars of the world? They don't. They want nothing to do with that. Which is why now they're going to do this 9/11 style commission. Here's Senator Chris Coons, the Democrat from Delaware.
This was a remarkable week, a powerful week. And I think the House managers, obviously Congresswoman Dean and Congressman Raskin and a very talented team, put on an incredibly compelling and powerful case. But there's still more evidence that the American people need and deserve to hear.
What more evidence do they need and deserve to hear? What more do we need? You guys did not use your full 16 hours. Why didn't you do it all? Why didn't you use all 16 hours? How many hours did they have left? Five? Was it four or five? Why didn't you put it all on display? That's kind of weird, isn't it? We needed to know it, just not during the impeachment trial. We didn't need to know it then. Is that not weird to you?
That was very weird.
You need to know this. Just not during the impeachment trial. You ended 5 hours early.
Yeah, you need to know this, but we didn't tell you when we had our moment to tell you, and now we need to go back and tell you again.
You need to. So here's what we got. We got a plan for that. It's like Elizabeth Warren.
And a 9/11 commission is a way to make sure that we secure the Capitol going forward and that we lay bare the record of just how responsible and how abjectly violating of his constitutional oath President Trump really was.
Or, and go with me for a moment, or the purpose of this is to drag it out even longer because you are obsessed with Donald Trump and you're using this for political gain. Is that possible? Is it maybe more about that? Because you know how we were talking about how they're hoping that this is going to help them in the midterm elections? Do you think that maybe this is going to last a really long time? And here's Jason Tells the Future on February 15th at 4:11:47, we're going to become 3 months before. It's going to be 3 months before the midterm election or some incredibly important primary. And that's when we'll get the results of the 9/11 commission. That's when the report will come out, the 9/11 style commission. And oh my gosh, it will detail so many horrible things that we, up until this point, didn't even know about the riot on January 6th. Details that could have been given to us on the impeachment trial, even though they had five extra hours, but they chose to call it quits a little bit early. But they chose to hang on to because they need to drag this out as long as humanly possible. I'm on to you. I'm on to you, Democrats. Michael Vanderveen was on to Lana Zak over at CBS News, their digital property. They got into a bit of an argument. House managers doctored some evidence. They added a check mark to tweets, which gave it the authority that it didn't have. Trump lawyer Vanderveen called it out. Lana Zak was all like, is that that big of a deal? And then they yelled at each other.
What you're talking about now is a check mark that's a verification on Twitter that did not exist on that particular tweet. A 2020 that should have actually read 2021. And the selective editing, you say, of the tapes. Is that the doctored evidence of what you're speaking?
That's not enough for you? That's not enough for you?
I am not a juror in this trial. What I'm trying to be clear for our viewers is what you're referring to, because not everybody has been following.
It's not okay to doctor a little bit of evidence respectfully.
I have not said it is okay.
Ma'am, your question is
I want to be clear for our viewers about what exactly you're saying when you say doctored evidence.
So, to me, he did go 0-60 unnecessarily. I probably would have done the same thing to set up what we're talking about as far as doctored evidence. In that clip, I did not hear her saying that that's not that big of a deal. She was just simply establishing what the doctored evidence was. So they continue.
The media has to start telling the right story in this country. The media is trying to divide this country. You are bloodthirsty for ratings. And as such, you're asking questions now that are already set up with a fact pattern. I can't believe you would ask me a question indicating that it's all right just to doctor a little bit of evidence. There's more stuff that we uncovered that they doctored, to be frank with you. And perhaps that will come out one day. But we won this case.
I mean, you could, again, I'm going to hold him to the same standard I'm holding the Democrats. You could tell us now, right? All the other stuff that hasn't yet come out about the doctored evidence. You could tell us now. I'm here.
I think the rules for these trials is you're just not supposed to lay out your full case. And then when you lose or when you win, you say, oh, look at how much more we had.
They had way more time left over than the Democrats. They could have also done this. Now, again, they didn't necessarily need to make their case, which is presumably why they didn't do it as part of their hearing. But right now, they could do it right now. They can put all of that information out, and I hope they do.
And I'm not a sore loser, but what happened, or a sore winner, I should say, but
what should happen is
somebody should look at the conduct of these House managers. It's unconscionable. Aside from all of the due process violations that my client had, and the media should be looking that at a square, straight way. The straight way.
I agree with that part. I hope of all the things that he found out or his team found out about the House impeachment managers and their conduct, he owes it to all of us to put that information out. There's no reason for him to drag this out. Let us know now. 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, good news for the only remaining region that was stuck in phase number one. Turns out, Department of Health of Washington, they screwed up and they're all like, my bad. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
So now all counties in Washington state can reopen in phase number two. That is official as of today. The Department of Health said they put out wrong data on Kittitas, Yakima, Benton, Franklin, Walla Walla, and Columbia counties. Now, this is something that we knew about before Inslee made his announcement on Thursday, because lawmakers from the region said at the time that the data is old and not necessarily reflective of the situation, and it didn't really make sense. We had a guest, Sharon Brown, on the show on Friday making the case. The Department of Health said a hospital in the South Central region of the reopening plan misreported data, and I guess apparently DOH didn't check the work. They didn't do any vetting of the data. They were all like, okay.
Yeah, just trust what you get. Figure it out later.
Q13 says when the region did not move to phase number two, it was brought to the attention of DOH that a hospital in the region appeared to be incorrectly reporting its hospital admission data. The hospital was all like, my bad.
Classic. That's my favorite go-to move.
DOH was all like, no worries, bro.
Ooh, yeah, that's on me. That's my bad.
And the hospital was all like, but Broseph, you could have helped us a little bit, man.
Yeah, we caught it in the end at some point, so good catch.
DOH was all like, it's not our job, bro.
Hey, it's all good, fam.
Hashtag gang gang, what was it?
Gang gang.
Yeah. Explain what that means again.
Gang gang is like, all right, sounds good.
That's what the kids are saying, apparently. That's what Peyton taught me today. They say gang gang. So if you have a kid who's like 16 years old, you should say to them, gang gang. And I'm sure they will be really impressed.
Tell them you watch the music videos and they say gang gang.
So the DOH say it's now working with the hospital on proper reporting. What else was wrong this entire time? I ask that as an open question, and I'm hoping someone will come to the table and maybe clarify some things, because that seems like a major screw-up. One piece of data that was incorrectly submitted to DOH, that was taken on its surface and not investigated immediately, and meant that an entire region was kept in phase number one, which limited its economic recovery. What else is wrong? What else was misreported and is currently being misreported?
Anything and everything.
Is no one else just maybe a little bit concerned? Just a little bit?
Put Detective Rance on the case.
Detective Rance is tired, man. I'm doing a lot of stuff. Detective Rance just spent 2 months working on a story that will be featured tonight on Tucker Carlson. We'll talk about it at 5:30 on this show. You know, Detective Rance is busy.
Okay, I get it. Detective Rance, busy
guy.
Get
off my back.
All right.
Gosh, let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The Biden administration.
So White House Deputy Press Secretary TJ Ducklow, he officially resigned over the weekend because he threatened a reporter who was investigating his relationship with another journalist who happened to also be covering the Biden campaign at the time that their relationship was occurring and potentially could have been or is currently covering the Biden administration. When TJ Ducklow found out about this, he told the female Politico reporter, "I will destroy you," followed by some sexually explicit and misogynistic insults, like the only reason this reporter was interested in covering the story is out of jealousy that he wasn't her. It's pretty out there. Now, the Biden administration knew that this had happened. They had meetings behind the scenes with Politico about the conduct, apparently. They did nothing. But then the story got out there, and they still did nothing. Then people pointed to this statement from Joe Biden just a few weeks ago.
"If you're ever working with me and I hear you treat another colleague with disrespect, talk down to someone, I promise you I will fire you on the spot. On the spot.
On the spot.
No ifs, ands, or buts.
Not even one
if. Everybody is entitled to be treated with decency and
Except
dignity.
Politico report.
That's been missing in a big way the last 4 years."
Well, it was missing during the Biden administration because they knew about this and they literally did nothing. It turns out there are a whole bunch of ifs, ands, or buts.
And if the guy was going to resign, Biden could have, like, followed through on his one promise so far that he's made, and he could have just fired him, and even Ducklow could have had, like, a handshake agreement.
Well,
like,
here's the thing. So, after everyone pointed to this clip, they were all like, "I guess we got to do something." They didn't want to get rid of him. So they ended up slapping him on the wrist with a one-week suspension. And according to Bloomberg News, they say people who knew about the situation and were part of the deliberations behind the scenes were upset because they're all like, "Joe said one thing. This is a bunch of malarkey." And they were all like, "He should be fired for this." And so the pressure behind the scenes grew, and he ended up just resigning, but not being fired. So Joe Biden, like so many others in Washington, they just lie. They signal their virtue. Now, I'm not shocked at this. I'm more shocked that people pretend that this doesn't always happen. It happens on the right. It happens on the left. If you are of value to a business or a campaign or an administration, you get special protections. It's that simple. That's how life works. Let's just acknowledge that. Let's simply acknowledge that.
Be a vital part to a powerful person or company, and you can do whatever you want.
It doesn't make it right, but it is reality. And so when Joe Biden gets up there and says, "Oh, I would never put up with something like this." Yes, you would. You did. You literally just did. You could have said, "No, I'm not accepting your resignation. You're fired." They could have done that very easily.
And then Biden gets 20 seasons of The Apprentice, and, you know, we just, time is a circle.
It would have to be a different title name, because I'm pretty sure that Trump owns some of the rights to
that. Maybe it just becomes a presidential thing.
Mark Burnett, who's the executive producer, is a big conservative. He's not doing it with Joe Biden. 1-800-465-877.
Kent, Olympia, Everett, Sammamish.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Sumner, Woodinville, Des Moines.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that. 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Alpine Specialty Cleaning at alpineclean.com. We ignore the city of Seattle because the media already is hyper-focused on stories out of Seattle. Instead, we spend all of our time focused on your communities, where you live, where you care about most. And we start in Pierce County, where deputies are being called heroes for saving an 83-year-old woman from the snowstorm on Saturday. It all happened in Puyallup. Cairo 7 TV's Matthew Smith has the details.
The woman had gone outside to feed her horses. That's when she fell into a fence and couldn't get out. When her daughters didn't hear from her, they quickly called 911. Here's where it gets interesting. The deputies got the woman inside, they warmed her up, then they fed her horses for her and also repaired the fence.
I have questions.
Of course you do. You question everything. Nothing can ever be simple for you, Jason. Go.
Well, I don't know much about horses.
Okay.
Why weren't they inside? Don't they have a barn?
The horses?
Yeah.
I mean, they still like to exercise. I don't think they get too cold. There's coats.
They don't get cold at all?
They wear coats. A lot of people get their horses'
like
coats.
Like you knit a little coat?
Like it's not like knitted. It's like
a little knitted coat around it?
It's like an insulated thing.
Okay.
Kind of looks like one of those vests you wear at the dentist.
She couldn't call that off for just one day because of all the snow?
I don't know. Horses got to roam. They're
okay,
big.
Fine.
They're big.
Number two. How long was she out there? What do you mean the kids didn't hear back from their mother?
It was a fortnight, Jason.
No, it wasn't.
Oh. Well, how long was it?
They don't say.
So then my guess is as good as yours. I'm going to say a fortnight.
A week. First of all, it can't be a fortnight. The snow started on Friday.
Maybe she fell before it started snowing. Did you think about that?
It didn't. She didn't start. No. She'd be dead. She's 87 years old or 83 years old. Number three. Are we certain she went to feed the horses and not eat the horses? Because everything was closed down. I couldn't get Grubhub to bring me dinner on Saturday because of all the snow. They wouldn't drive. Was she in a similar position? Starving? Didn't think the snow was coming?
Do you think that horse
just
owners...
I'm just asking questions.
It's a bad question.
I'm just asking questions.
That's a horrible question.
That's all. I'm just asking questions.
Name me one person who's ever been like, oh yeah, I had my horse the other day for dinner. It was delicious.
When was the last time we had such a snowstorm? It's been decades.
2019, we had snowpocalypse.
It was not 2019 like that.
2019
it was 2017, what you're thinking of.
It's all snowpocalypse.
And do we... another question. Did they tell us about her previously mysteriously missing horses from 2017?
No, because maybe there aren't any.
Or maybe Matthew Smith, because of his bias, his anti-horse bias, chose not to report it.
I won't let you call Matthew Smith a horse racist.
I'm just asking questions. I'm just asking questions. Do you think she gives them a tip for fixing the fence?
Probably not. People don't tip in the snow.
And how much fence work did they do? I mean, thank you for helping this poor woman with the fence, but was it like a major remodel that they did? Was this or just like a little patch?
Who knows? They're better people than I am. I'm not touching a fence.
Are you nuts? I'm not touching her.
With COVID?
Yeah, were you crazy? How long have you been out there? Oh, you're too far gone. I'm out. I'd be the worst first responder. I'd be the absolute worst.
Thank God you chose this profession.
Meanwhile, Katy Perry, pop star extraordinaire, she heard a teen sing last night from Snohomish County, and she thinks he can be the next one to win American Idol.
I see you winning American Idol if you want to.
Uh-huh, if you want to. To which the kid turned to her and said, I didn't want to. And then he just strolled out. What a dumb comment. You could win if you want to. I just came here. My parents dragged me here. They said I had to. I'm not really all that interested. Judge Lionel Richie told Benson Boone, 18 years old, that he is a natural talent. Benson is from Monroe. He had his first Idol audition air on ABC last night for American Idol, which I forgot is still on the air. And then earlier today, I looked at some of their commercials, and they say they've changed things around for COVID. I don't know what they did differently. I'm assuming they're just socially distanced like they are on Shark Tank, I guess. But he performed. The Herald says he's also an athlete. He's an athlete and a singer. He did a backflip upon hearing all the compliments and how he now has been moved on to the next part of the show where I think they send him to Hollywood or whatever they do now with COVID.
So this guy thinks he's like Zac Efron in High School Musical. He's going to play sports. He's going to sing. He's going to do backflips.
I mean, he's a good-looking young guy, right? I mean, he kind of has that, like, he's a blonde. He looks like he could be a pop star.
So go on Disney Channel. Don't go on American Idol.
Well, let's see if he can actually sing.
I don't need no...
Auto-tune.
Right? It's all fake. I could do this. Oh, I'm good-looking and talented. Oh, I can be a star athlete and I can sing. Oh, Katy Perry likes me.
I don't need no cameras to see your point of view.
It's too affected. Right?
What do you mean it's affected?
Like, he's too into it. Like, he's trying too hard. I'd be like, come on, dog. You got pulled back, even though Randy Jackson's not on anymore. And I don't even know when the last time he was even on TV.
So you're just, like, picturing him, like, flipping his hair and, like, squinting really hard when he's singing all these words. Like, he's got way too much passion
it's
going
just,
into it. I can
much.
See that.
It's too much.
I need someone to turn to.
What song is this?
Never heard it.
I guess my heart never learns.
No, oh, you don't need to clap. Shut up.
Yours. If you're
yes.
never here when it hurts.
Oh, okay. I can hit that note.
Can you?
Whatever.
Can you do it right now?
I could. I'm not going to because here's something I learned a long time ago. I don't perform for free.
You're on the air right now. You are doing your job literally.
Yeah, I get paid for this. I don't perform anywhere for free. Just real quick, by the way, show note. I'll be on Tucker Carlson later on this evening. If you want to watch that video, it'll be on at twitter.com/JasonRant. But like I said, I don't do anything for free. And I'm not going to perform. I'm not a monkey. You don't just snap your fingers and you hear me sing. And by the way, I wouldn't have picked that song. He's a little too pitchy.
What song would you pick? You'd pick something no one knows that you put on your Instagram story like once a week of some band that nobody's ever heard of and some deep track that nobody would ever even find even if they had like six good songs. It's like number 17 on the list.
I would pick The Voice. You're the voice. Na, 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 na.
Never
Who
heard
sings
of it?
That? Go. It's from an Australian singer. And
you expect me to know these?
Richard. Oh, Farth. Oh, what the heck is his name? Someone will text in, and then we'll go to traffic. Someone will. You're the voice. Na, 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 na. Na, 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 na,
you really expect somebody to text in and know the Australian song?
They're going to know it. 1-800-465-8770. What's the name of the song or who sings The Voice by it's Richard. Maybe it's not Richard something. You're the voice. Da, da, da. Maybe it's not The Voice. Maybe I just made that part up. But the tune is correct. I don't remember.
I'll just take your word for it.
Okay. We're going to get into capital gains taxes when we come back. It's a Jason Rant Show. To the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. The threat of Washington Democrats instituting an income tax on capital gains just took a huge step forward. That, according to my next guest, who noticed some significant movement under the cover of a holiday weekend from the Senate Ways and Means Committee. Joining me on the line is Jason Mercier. He's the director of the Center for Government Reform over at the Washington Policy Center. Jason, welcome back to the show.
Jason, it's good to be on with you. Now, I was having a pretty good Valentine's Day till I made the mistake of checking my email and seeing that the Ways and Means Committee on a Sunday has scheduled for tomorrow, just in 2 days, moving the capital gains income tax bill, Senate Bill 5096, out of committee. So as you mentioned, the threat is real, and it looks like this is happening.
Now, generally speaking, you don't put this on an agenda. You don't put anything on an agenda if you don't think you have the votes.
Yeah, there are three things very significant about this. The first is just from a transparency standpoint. putting out a notice on a Sunday that you're going to add a bill to executive action for 2 days later, and amongst those 2 days is a holiday, President's Day. So not a lot of notice transparency on that front. But the other thing of note, again, is a chair does not put a bill on executive session unless they think they have the votes to move it. And the third noteworthy thing, this is a not only is this an income tax, it is a major tax proposal that is moving through committee before the budget is out. On March 17th, we have a revenue forecast. We already know revenue is growing by 7%. Receipts have been coming in hundreds of millions of dollars higher. We've been getting federal relief funds. So, you know, in a few more weeks when we have that revenue forecast, you can see revenues up even higher. And yet we're moving this tax before having that complete picture.
Now, to be fair, they always, Democrats always wanted to do this, right? I mean, this had nothing to do with any of the forecasts. You could have a forecast of $1 billion more than they thought, $10 billion more than they thought, and they would have still gone down this path, right?
Well, Jason, that's a very fair point. I mean, we've been doing this for 9 years now. This has been a tax in search of justification. It was coming in proposals for this, and we had huge surpluses, proposals when we had the COVID crisis. So, I mean, to your point, this tax is always going to be out there. But the fact that it is moving this quickly, even before that complete revenue forecast is out, it may this may actually be happening. The Senate was always the backstop against this. So it looks like it might be within one vote. We'll see what happens. But we may well be having a constitutional challenge this summer about whether or not this is an income tax.
Well, let's talk about this vote that would come in committee. If you're just joining me, by the way, we're talking with Jason Mercier of the Washington Policy Center about a vote that will happen at the Ways and Means Committee on the capital gains tax. I'm going to assume that State Senator Mark Mullett, the Democrat from Issaquah, will join Republicans on this. I'm not 100% certain. That is my assumption. Wouldn't Democrats still have the votes, though, at that point?
Yeah, that committee kind of grew in size this year, so they probably have the ability to get it through committee. As you mentioned, Senator Mullett repeatedly said he is opposed to this. And if this actually, it's 1:30 tomorrow on the Senate Ways and Means Committee is when this exact session is supposed to happen. If it goes through, then we'll just have to keep our eye on the full Senate and see what they do.
Yeah.
And, you know, it would have to go back to the House. But again, the Senate's always been the backstop against this moving forward.
Well, and the funny thing is, especially when we're talking about committees, you know, that's where bills die. That's where bad bills die. That's where good bills die. And usually, you know, we tell people to go ahead and contact members on a committee because it's obviously easier to kill a bill there than it would be to kill a bill and, you know, make a whole bunch of different phone calls to a whole bunch of different people. But when we're talking about the Ways and Means Committee, for the most part, to get on that committee, you're considered pretty safe for re-election. So there's not a whole bunch of constituent leverage that you have via putting pressure, right? I mean, maybe Karen Kaiser, maybe in that case, you can put some calls in Monk and Dinkler. But I mean, these are folks who on this committee, for the most part, are pretty on the Democratic side. They're pretty ideological. I don't see any of them moving.
So, Jason, this is the magic number. There are 25 votes needed to either pass or kill a bill in the Senate. And assuming Senator Mullett has not changed his opposition to this, that puts you at 22 votes against this. So three are in play. And the three, the people you need to keep an eye on are Senator Vandewedge, Senator Cleveland, Senator Hobbs, and Senator Carlisle. Those are the ones that will probably determine whether or not we are going to be moving forward to a constitutional challenge this summer.
Well, isn't Vandewedge, isn't he on Ways and Means?
That will give a pretty good indication tomorrow about where he is on this.
Yeah, so we'll know tomorrow whether or not. But I mean, again, if it's up for vote tomorrow, we're going to safely assume then he's going to support capital gains or Mark Mullett is changing his mind, which, again, doesn't seem likely because, again, they wouldn't be putting this up for a vote. But also, Carl, I mean, why would they go up for a vote if they didn't have it?
Well, I mean, and that's what makes it so noteworthy. I mean, again, jumping ahead of the revenue forecast, the short notice, if it's scheduled, they probably have the votes. But what you have to, I mean, there's no debate about this anywhere in the world. This is an income tax. We know this from the IRS. We know this from every state. We know this from the actual text of the bill. It says this tax applies to the income reported to the federal IRS. So if this moves forward, I guess the next step will be, what does the state Supreme Court do?
So what do you think, looking ahead, assuming this goes ahead and passes, and that's my guess, when you get in front of a Supreme Court that is elected, that does not hide their ideology, and certainly the way they've ruled in certain issues in the past, they do have a tendency to lean into ideology versus the actual letter of the law. I mean, how confident are you that they would ignore ideological reasoning here to actually say, yeah, no, it's pretty clear that this is an income tax, which is illegal?
Well, before I get to the court, there's actually one step that is being skipped in this, and that is they are denying our right of referendum by attaching an emergency clause to this bill. So ultimately, this next step shouldn't be court. It should be the ability for the citizens to decide whether or not they want to run a referendum on this. But by attaching an emergency clause, they are denying us that constitutional right. As for what happens with the court, you never know what's going to happen. That's the chance that you take. I can tell you, from nearly 100 years, the state Supreme Court has consistently said that you own your income, which makes it property. And nothing has changed over that 100-year period. I also know that last year they refused to hear the Seattle income tax case. Mm-hmm. That was originally the test case to try to open the door to an income tax without a constitutional amendment. So if there were five justices ready to break down these prior rulings, they probably would have taken that Seattle case. But you just never know what's going to happen.
Maybe. I mean, I suppose I looked at that and I was saying, at least internally, that that's a city doing this versus the state. And I would imagine that they would possibly give more deference to a state action versus a city going at it alone.
Well, what I can tell you is the Supreme Court has twice before overturned an income tax passed by the legislature when the legislature tried to call it an excise tax. And one of my favorite rulings from them was in 1960. It was a one-page ruling, and it basically just said, stop asking us. We're not changing our minds. If you want to graduate an income tax, amend the Constitution. And on that point, not only do you have nearly 100 years of consistent rulings from the state Supreme Court, you have the fact that the voters have rejected six constitutional amendments to allow a graduated income tax. So if you've got consistent precedent, you've got the voters rejecting six constitutional amendments, for the Supreme Court now to say, you know what, never mind, we were wrong all this time, mm-hmm. that would just be shocking.
I mean, I don't want to talk you out of your opinion, but the people have been pretty clear on car tap fees, too, and that didn't necessarily go well for them the last go around. But we'll see. I certainly hope that you're right. I mean, it seems very clear that the capital gains tax is unconstitutional, but we'll see what ends up happening. It all starts tomorrow at about 1:30. We expect that this is going to go up for a vote, and it would appear that they have the votes to get it out of committee. We've been talking with Jason Mercier from the Washington Policy Center. You can learn more about them over at washingtonpolicy.org. Jason, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Great. Thanks, Jason.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Don't forget, I will be on Tucker Carlson later this evening talking about an exclusive where the Washington State Department of Commerce gave federal COVID relief tax dollars to nonprofits pursuing radical political agendas. We're going to jump into that story when we come back. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show.